Hello, everyone, and welcome to the big show. I'm Jeff Gammon. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And I get to hang out with a couple really cool people today. And we're actually doing much better today with our ratio of Brits to Americans on the show. So, Ian, we have you outnumbered 2 to 1. That's better than usual. How are you?
I am great. I am great over here in the mighty England land. It's wonderful. Yes, cold weather's going weird, and it's warm, and it's cold, and it's warm, and it's cold. Typical October, but yeah, everything's fine over here. I've been teaching this week, so the usual kind of things. Coming to the end of the weekend, it'll be nice. I'm going down near Crikey Trousers Land, down towards Graham in Bristol.
Oh, nice.
So I'm going to see my daughter. She's at uni, so we're going to come visit her. So that's
That's
our
awesome.
plans. So we've got a long weekend. I'm looking forward to it, to be honest.
Awesome. All right, Ian, my introduction to Bristol, so learning that it was a place, is from actually an old song. I think it's a punk song. I can't remember for sure. It's been so long since I've heard it. Doing the Bristol Stomp.
Yes, that
And
is a punk rock song, and I don't know, and that rings a bell.
I wonder if
I know,
Graham
but
knows how to do the Bristol stomp. We need to ask him.
yeah.
well, the Devells. It's in Bristol, sharp as a pistol when they do the Bristol stomp.
The Devells, there we go.
Yeah,
Well,
79. It was from. Had its root in Bristol, Pennsylvania. Not the original one, but the fake one in America.
huh. Well, there we go. All right. Well,
It's a nice town, lovely city.
today in punk rock history, learning about
Yes.
Bristol, PA.
It's
Huh.
not even punk either. It's not even 60s. It's early 60s.
All right. Well, there you go.
But you only missed on a couple of key items, Jeff.
Yeah.
Wasn't punk.
It wasn't
Wasn't
punk.
in the UK.
No.
Other than
No,
that, you were
not from
spot
Bristol.
on.
No. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay, but Tom, as crazy as it sounds, that's how I learned about Bristol, England.
It's a nice city down in the West Country.
Yeah. It's
Southwest.
so now I'm wondering, is there another Bristol stomp, like maybe from a musical or something?
Well,
That's
that Bristol stomp makes me think punks. It does make me completely think punks, and that was no other reason to think not
all
in
right,
that
well.
era. But this wasn't, I guess. Everything goes around, comes around, and all that kind of good stuff.
There you go. All right. I guess I know what how I'll be wasting my afternoon when we're done recording.
Listening to the Bristol stomp.
But yeah. So all right. Well, not to be confused with the Oakland stomp, the San Diego stomp, or the LA stomp. Tom, how are you?
Mountain View stomp. I'm doing great. I am a bit disappointed. Fleet Week is happening in San Francisco's this week, and it's when they have the military, the Navy brings in a bunch of ships and they have an air show. And usually the
Oh,
highlight
hence
of the
Fleet Week. Got it.
Fleet Week. And they usually bring in the Blue Angels that are the headliners, and I love to go down there along the waterfront, around Aquatic Park, Fisherman's Wharf,
Yeah,
and watch the
cool.
planes fly back and forth. But because of the shutdown, there are no Navy ships and
Oh,
no Blue Angels.
right.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
So
I hadn't forgot. I've forgotten all about. Well, I'd say I've forgotten about. It's kind of, you don't really think, realize that.
the air show, instead of being headlined by the Blue Angels, will now be headlined by the Canadian Air Stunt Team.
That's,
So how ironical is that?
yes, that's all kinds of irony right there.
The
yeah.
Canadians are sure we'll go to the top of the bill, no problem. We're still coming.
Did we have to pay a tariff on getting them into the country to fly?
No, but I hope they're bringing some Canadian whiskey with them and selling it cheap along the wharf.
Oh yeah. I'm all about getting some Canadian bootleg whiskey.
Anyway,
Yeah.
it cracked me up.
Madness.
Sure, we're coming. And
Madness.
the statement from the Canadian team was just kind of hilarious, totally tongue
I mean, that's interesting because over
in cheek.
here where I live, I've said before, we're kind of on a flight a very clear flight practice flight path for various military jets because no commercial stuff comes kind of within the airspace where I am. So most of our military jets kind of play around above us and around the area. There's lots of good sort of waypoints and empty moors and for miles and miles. And so, but today, what was up? F-15s. No,
Wow.
they're not on strike. They've still got money for jet fuel. They were tearing around. They were tearing around making a racket over my house today.
Maybe they didn't get the memo yet. I mean, with so much of the US government shut down, it is questionable under the best of circumstances whether or not the mail would get to them. Now, even more so.
So, for a non-American trying to understand this, so is all services like post and garbage collection and things that are run by local government all kind of awaiting whatever decisions to be made?
Well, local and state government still functions as normal because that's operating independently of the federal budget.
Oh, yes, of course. So that's one level. Yeah, that's one level down from the top, isn't it? Yeah, so yeah.
And then for U.S. Postal Service, that U.S. Postal is a government mandated business service. So it's designed to operate outside regular federal government functions. So the Postal Service is still functioning. But like go to national parks and well, there's not going to be anyone to let you through the gates. And other government services that aren't the military are at least temporarily shut down while all this plays out. I remember as a kid when there was a government shutdown, my dad was a federal employee. He worked for the Food and Drug Administration, and he just sat at home. And okay, so Ian, here's the crazy thing. Federal employees that are not working because of the shutdown, they're not getting paid. So they will presumably get the pay that they should have gotten during the shutdown. But for now, like if a payday comes up for most of these employees, there's no paycheck coming out.
And there's no kind of safeguard for such things because it's not like it hasn't happened before.
No, there's no safeguard. And if a federal employee's like, oh crap, I need to make money so I can pay my mortgage or buy food for my family, and they go pick up like a temp part-time job, they can be fired for doing that.
Because they're in
So
breach of their contract. That's
they have to
ridiculous.
sit at home basically and do nothing and wait for for Congress to get a budget approved. And yeah, and historically the government shutdowns over budget have all been political moves, and
As a
so
way
here we
of
are.
trying to bring the budget down or up or get a particular thing through.
It's about control and getting the thing that you want.
Yes, thank
And
you.
so and I don't see this as a political statement. This is just merely a historical fact.
With kids, we call them temper tantrums, Ian. That's
Yes.
a simple explanation.
Right.
Same
And
idea. Yeah.
Father Teddy out with the pram. Father Teddy out the pram.
Yep, there you go. And so each time we've had a government shutdown over failure to approve a budget in my lifetime, it has been Republican controlled Congress. And I'm not making any political statements there. I'm just
That's just true
offering
as a
up a
fact.
piece of data. So, yeah. Anyhow,
Anyhow.
lucky for us, Tom is, like me, still able to function despite our government shutdown. Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, good times. Hey, that's the British and American politics show for this week. Thanks for joining us. How about instead of that, we talk some tech stuff, and Ian, I
Yeah,
see you have the first story in
I've
the
thrown a
chat.
story in.
So
I've
tell
thrown two
us.
stories here. I've thrown two articles on the same story. It's interesting because it pertains to the Online Safety Act in the UK, So, Discord's had a data breach. 70,000 records have been hacked and captured between a third-party vendor and them. So it isn't Discord's loss, it's the third party. And the suspicion is the third party that does age verification and confirmation. So now in the UK, if you're accessing anything, we're considered it adult, things like Reddit, a service where that happens, you have to prove you're an 18-year-old. So you have to have your things like your driving license or your passport. A governmental ID, photo ID, something that proves I am who I say I am, and you use that to authorize your access. That data is part of the data that's been lost in this 70,000 records that have been grabbed by hackers.
Of course it
Oh
is.
dear. But it also then leads on to the op-ed story I've dropped in, which is the second part of the same tale where the commenter at the moment, also one of the, again, we're not talking politics, but it links it. So there's two bits of UK government sort of changes and things that are going to come that are on the one. The first thing, the Online Safety Act, that's here and now and in use, hence why people were collecting government IDs and data to know who you are. The other side of that is one of the new things we're considering is introducing a digital ID card. So everyone will have some form of national ID with a national ID number that you can then, which would then interlink into your other services that you get at government level. Nice idea. It's partly a small wave of flag to the various right-wing groups thinking it's that some way of ensuring that the black economy can't be fed by immigrant workers. Whether that work or not, I really don't know, or I doubt, to be honest. If people are going to do that, people are going to do that. Politics aside, this digital, this then worries a lot of commentators, including the one from the article I posted, that if we do go down this route of having digital IDs that are intrinsically much more us, I am user number 1, 2, 3, 4, and my data gets compromised, and I am then much more in chance of an identity theft than I was before. So there is our concern. I mean, what I mean. There's the interesting conversation. Do we give a security versus obscurity of do we share out do our does having this sort of data and having to prove our authenticity online in some way compromise our own safety? Because it does expose that. I mean, the whole thing from a guy called Johnny Evans wrote a really it's a really good piece actually about just what this is, the risk of this, again, from a UK user's point of view, of potentially leaves us less safe than we were in the beginning, because we have more additional pieces of information that a hacker could potentially gather about us to impersonate us online, to steal our money, to do other commit other acts of fraud.
Well,
So.
when you as a government, when a government is imposing something like this, where you have to collect additional data, that creates one level of security issues. But for the companies, like in this case, Discord, that then have to rely on third-party services, then it creates a different level. But the problem that Discord has, this is a problem so many companies have, and it goes beyond whether or not you're collecting data because of a government mandate. It's the relying on third-party services where you don't have complete control over their security measures. And so you can have like an outside contractor or vendor who has access to your system. Their systems become compromised, and through that compromise, now the attackers can initiate a security incident on your systems.
It's the classic method of getting in that you break into the weakest link. The weakest link is often the third party or the contractors or the temporary contractor credentials that don't get deactivated after the contract finishes. Those are things we see in my industry that the fairly standard ways that people hack. I don't know how this one was perpetrated, but it just gives you the idea that we are becoming more and more sort of like at risk of losing of identity of I'll go for the old idea identity theft, but it's that idea of hackers gaining access to our data and either be able to access our bank accounts and access other stuff and rob us or equally perpetrate things in my name. So
Well, so you have several levels of things to consider here. One is what is your position inherently on a national ID system? That's point one. Forget about where the data is stored and if somebody can get it. Is it okay for the government to have that kind of information on each and every one of its citizens?
in
And in
some
the
look at some of
US,
the
our position has been no to the federal government, but yes to the state government.
We've
So
seen in Europe.
we all have state IDs issued for driving or just IDs. You need some sort of form of ID, but we give that power to the states. And at least in the US, people do not want the federal government to have that.
Yeah,
Then
interestingly.
you have the problem of breaches, just plain security, which is if somebody breached the California Department of Motor Vehicles database, they would effectively have the same thing. But at least it's one point of failure that if they do a good job, then I don't have to worry about my data being in six places. But then you come to the third point, which is Jeff's point, which is the outsourcing of this task. Well, I'm kind of okay with the state of California having my data. I mean, they may lose it, but at least I know it's in one place. But I'm not okay with some random third-party company that I've never heard of, and there's probably 20 of them that have all my ID information. That's the problem that I see. And frankly, I don't really care if the federal government has my ID information. That's a discussion for another day. But I think you have to do two things: have good security and have a single point of potential failure that you can do everything you can to protect that single point of failure and not allow these independent, private, profit-making companies serving up all this information.
I mean, my concern over here are twofold. For the record, we've seen the ID card thing work very well in some of the in some of Europe. Quite a few European countries now have a single ID, which gives you access to healthcare, gives you access to government services, and all those kind of things, and it works very, very well. So there's that on one side, but on the other side, UK have a history of we don't have the skills in government to create any of these systems. We just don't. So we'll get a third party to do it for us. And generally, the third party's always been employed via the means of nepotism, corruption, and otherwise poor quality choices.
I'm
So every
shocked to hear
system,
that.
every computer-related thing that's ever been done in government in the UK I've ever seen has always been a shocking mess of one description or
Let's
another.
talk about Fujitsu and the Postal Service.
Exactly. I mean, this is it. It's been one mess after another where it's just I my concern, I like the idea. I don't think the idea is a bad one. The problem I have is I think the implementation will be shocking and terrible and not work. We don't have the skills in government. We're going to buy some skills in because that's how it'll work. If we do it badly, it's going to be a horrible shit show. And I'm not going to be shocked if it ends up being that way, because no doubt they'll go for the lowest bidder, because they always do, and they'll probably end up with someone like Tata or whatever. And their consultancy services, they're doing an awful lot of things with government stuff these days. Or the one we used to call Calamity Zoo. I don't think they still exist anymore. So, but they're
So,
equally
so in
terrible.
you in UK, if you have to prove you are who you are physically,
Yeah.
how do you do it?
Either driving license or passport.
So you've already got it.
Yeah.
You've already
No, this
got a
isn't.
central database, which is your driver's license, and I'm
Yeah.
sure 80% of UK citizens have a driver's license.
They do. And you can kind of say, well, we can use that DB and we can use the one for passports, marry those up, and that should give us a reasonable amount of data. And you'd hope, yeah, that might be all right. And that saves quite a great, and yet another ID that's separate from that.
Right.
But I've also got another ID which works for the government for my tax. I've got another ID for the health service. I've got another ID for my driver's license. And I've got another ID, and I've got another ID code for my passport. Three separate identity numbers that all are identifying me as who I am. So that's a
All that
whole
data
bag of, that's a,
is sitting in 1,000 databases at 1,000 different companies.
in different places all around the UK government, yeah, and can be called up by various parts of them again to marry that data up. So I don't know how it will work, but this, it's very much in talk at the moment. It's very much a thing that's up in the air. But I as I said, I'm not opposed to the idea. I'm just opposed to however they'll implement it, which will be a shit show. And it might well be that the talk is it will be digital. It will not be a physical item. We will get yet another SIM, we'll get another card that we can install on our phone, that'll be on our phone, that we can just, and we can
Could
scan to
possibly
access
go
them.
wrong?
Exactly. What can possibly go wrong?
Okay, Ian, does the government ensure everyone has a smartphone?
No, they don't.
So that means there's a segment of your population that will not be able to have an ID because it's a digital element where, if you're going to use it, you need to have a smartphone where
Yeah.
the app lives.
I mean, the thing is with that one now, there's huge amount of nonsense getting posted by people who say, oh, but Granny won't have that. Granny's got an iPad and an iPhone. The generation that we worry about not having technology are slowly dropping off now because they're dying. In reality, they're dying. There'll be a few tinfoil hat folk that won't have a mobile phone or have a, or all again, that they're the edges of the poverty line, which won't have access to a mobile phone.
Yeah, and
But for
that's
the
who I'm thinking
majority,
of.
but for the majority of the population, we'll have an smartphone, even if it's not the latest device, they'll have something usable. Probably even at that point, I still think, because
But
a lot
how
of
hard
government
is it to
services and
issue a
access.
physical card with a chip in it? It's not
Yeah, no,
rocket
but then
science.
again, they did away with, we used to have the, but for the employment, there's a thing called National Insurance Number. That used to be a plastic card with a chip in it. Doesn't exist anymore. They got rid of it years ago to save cost. Went away, I think I discovered recently, went about 15, 20 years ago. A
Wow.
friend of mine lost his and thought he might have to order another one. Then we discovered that, no, we don't issue them anymore. We still issue a physical driving license. We still issue a physical passport. But, it's fascinating sort of how all these different things work in different places.
What's really fascinating is that they work at all.
Yes, they do work at all, which shocks me as well, given again misadventure in various systems with any kind of big organization trying to implement something as vast as that. It's always going to have problems. You can't get away from it. It's too big a thing, isn't it? In the end, that kind of mass organization of any of those kind of things. Well, if they pull it off, well, brilliant. That will be an IT coup of the decade. But my inner spidey sense is tingling, and I'm watching the news carefully to see who, which government quango that's been that's mates with whoever in government has managed to get themselves a nice cushy job to provide this thing and have no clue about what they're doing.
It's a good gig if you can get it.
Oh God,
Yeah.
COVID was the worst one over here. The PPE things was pretty shocking, but that's a political story for another day.
Yeah. Well, okay. Then in that
But
case,
yes.
let's rip something apart, Tom.
Yeah. What's been Tumblr ripping apart?
Okay, well, it wasn't me. It was iFixit. Did a teardown on the new
Oh.
Meta Ray-Ban AR glasses. And I was particularly interested in what they would find about the optics, because optics are really bound by physics. When you have a small space, and physics is physics, it's hard to get around that. So that anyway, they did their typical really good job, I fix it,
Oh yeah.
of
Yes.
looking at every little bit of a device. And so there were a couple things that I pulled out of this. One was the battery. So there's always a question about the battery. And what they found inside was it's a 960 milliwatt hour battery. And it's milli they express the capacity in milliwatts. And normally you see a battery in milliamps. So you have to multiply the amps, the current I, by the voltage V to get watts. So they said milliwatts. So I think if the power supply is 5 volts, you divide by five to compare it to like an iPhone. But it may only be like a 2 volt supply. I'm not sure. But just as a comparison, so they said 960 milliwatt hours. The iPhone 17 is about 3,700 milliamp hours. So I think it's on the order of 10 to 15x less capacity than your iPhone, just to give you an idea.
Okay, so
And
they probably went with milliwatt hours because the number is bigger when you
looks
look at it
bigger,
than
yeah.
milliamp.
Yeah, except I'm not sure why I fix it. They don't have a pony in this race, so maybe it's just the way that particular part is spec'd, and they may not be 100% sure what the power supply is. So anyway, so it's a very small, it's small. The point is, yes, the battery in an AR glass is small. And of course, knowing the capacity of the battery is one thing, but you need to know how much consumption is from the demand of the electronics and everything in these glasses. So it just gives you some insight. It doesn't, the how long it's going to last is how long it's going to last. But anyway, it's small. It's a small battery. That's one thing. The second thing is they have in this article I linked to a really cool interactive 3D model, because they do all these 3D scans with, I guess, their CT scanners or something that they're using. And that's really cool to look at. It's kind of fun.
That
And
is
then on
pretty
the
cool.
it is really cool. And then on the optics side, basically the key thing is that there's a projector in the right arm of the eyeglasses that projects the image onto the glass in your frames. And of course, the glass in your frames has to be kind of a special glass to do that, with the right shape and the right coatings and so on.
So
And I
if you don't
guess,
have your right eye, you can't use these, correct?
right, because it only projects on the right lens of your
Okay.
glasses. And apparently they've learned that it's a geometric waveguide, not a diffractive waveguide. And I guess the way the think of that, I'm not an expert, but it's basically a more sophisticated waveguide. So waveguide is like a tunnel that light travels through. It's the equivalent of a wire for electrons. A waveguide is like a wire for photons. So how it transmits photons from one component to another. And so I was always interested in how they constructed waveguides, what kind of optics they're using, and so on. And basically, the summary is based on the components that are used here and the sophistication of the optics, iFixit is surmising that they're probably selling these things at a loss, just to give you an idea of how expensive all these optics are. So, when we talk about the cost of a gadget, we usually focus on the cost of the electronics, the chip inside and the memory and all that stuff. But in these kind of devices, it's very much the optics that are driving up the cost. But they're, I guess the summary is that they're using a pretty sophisticated version of optics here and something above and beyond, Google Glass and some of those things. But it's expensive.
That's cool, though.
Got 32 GB flash storage and 2 gig of RAM to run the whole
RAM.
thing, and a little Snapdragon processor.
Yeah, so they got a Snapdragon, 32 gigs of flash, so permanent storage, and 2 gigs of RAM. And it's DDR4X, it's pretty
It's
fast RAM.
crazy.
I wonder with this, I mean, okay, the optics in this really are cool, but looking at what they're doing, I'm wondering what are the limitations for prescription lenses? Because I would assume to accomplish what they need to do, there's a threshold where your vision would be bad enough that the corrective lenses would pose a problem for rendering the images.
Yeah, because it's so dependent on the shape of those lenses. But I like the statement they make here. After going through all the optics stuff, it says all this to say, don't expect your local optician to be able to replace a lens in these for you or stuff like that.
No, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, if
This
you think about it, if you've got astigmatism or anything else that makes what you see and the shape of what you see, I mean, that could really have an effect on how well they work or not, as the case may be.
Right.
Yeah, as we continue to talk about this, I'm realizing the likelihood I would be able to use these glasses is extremely low.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, if you start hearing about people that have those kind of special needs with lenses, how they get on with these things. Because I'm sure they thought about it. They're not idiots. They know that that's the case.
I mean, the lens manufacturer
If you
is a
walk in
good
with a
one.
certain, yeah, it is. If you walk in with a certain prescription, do they just tell you, forget it? These aren't going to work for you.
I'm guessing the answer to that is that's exactly what would happen. It's, yeah. But still, I mean, this is really cool technology. And I mean, the optics part, the whole thing in general, these are still birth control glasses.
Yes, they are. Absolutely. These are
But
still not ones you're gonna be impressing anyone wearing.
no.
And you're gonna look like a dork, and people know you're a dork, and therefore it's
Or
what
they're
you
going
and
to
call
get
wanker
pissed
wear.
off,
It's
or they're going to
wanker
get pissed
wear,
off.
as Ewan said, it's wanker wear. You see someone wearing them, you just go, oh.
But
I mean, it's just so out in front. If you go to lunch with a friend and the friend says, "Are those Meta Ray-Ban glasses you're wearing?" You say, "Yes," and your friend gets up and leaves. You'll know why. But because they're worried about you recording audio, video of the interaction, and I get that totally, and that's the thing that kind of shies me away from these devices. But to be fair, your friend is also carrying a phone. And has been for 15 years, that it could very easily turn on audio recording during the whole lunch as well. It's just a little bit harder to do.
And yeah, the difference, I suppose, is that that the phone isn't as obvious because it's not sitting on your face. And we have a couple decades of getting used to smartphones just being a thing. They're ubiquitous.
Yeah, I wonder if we're ever going to get to the point where people wearing glasses with video and audio capability are not. But
Eventually, I mean, I like some of the idea of, again, the thing that you can get directions for where you're going pop up in the lens, or some information via AI or a translation going on. I mean, those things are useful and interesting. I still want my
Yeah, I
Babelfish
agree.
and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, I'm
Yeah.
having a look at the thing. It says you're looking at so and so. This was built in 1855, and it's the
Yeah, I
home of
think you're
so and
right.
so. You know, some of those things I can see
But what I don't want
interesting.
is every text message or email that I get popping up in my field of
Yeah,
view. I
exactly.
do not want that. I
Which is why I don't have a
never want to
smartwatch.
see, can you pick up some milk?
How about ads as you walk past a store? Again,
Yeah,
yes,
right.
at the point at which
And
they get thrown in the bin, yeah.
that's exactly what's going to
Because exactly what they want them for.
happen. Because I don't think you have to figure out for the companies, how are they going to make money with this? And with Facebook and Apple and Google and companies like that, it's clear it'll all come to back to ads or services of some sort. So you'd have to buy a subscription, the usual choice, subscription or get ads.
It's Cory Doctorow's shitification all over again, isn't it?
Well,
Every bit of interesting technology gets screwed up because people want to make too much money out of it. Want to
Even
wring
make
every
money at
last dollar out of
all,
it. Wants to wring
right?
every
I
last
mean,
dollar out of it.
the problem is you don't make enough money on hardware. Nobody makes
No.
enough money on hardware,
Yeah.
rarely. You know, the margins on hardware can be pretty bad unless you're the only supplier in town.
Yeah, but you don't want glasses when you walk past McDonald's. It starts showing you a ticker tape price, a price list of the products inside before you walk by, do you?
Dancing hamburgers and French fries.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's things you don't need or want.
But I think, and clearly the path to money for Meta is clear. And, they can afford to sell these at a loss or no profit and they'll figure out how to make money later. But you just can't have a startup company that builds these glasses and tries to sell them without, it's like video security cameras. There's a reason why all those companies went to required subscription because they don't make enough money on the hardware. We're not willing to pay $500 for a single security camera.
Right. And even then, at some point, the companies would still have to charge a subscription because you buy a security camera for $500.
And use it for
And
10 years. Yeah.
yeah. So, that $500 over 10 years for a company, that's not much money.
Yeah, it's
No.
hard. Unless there's a 3 to 5 year upgrade cycle, it's really hard to make money on hardware. I mean, I guess a company like Dell makes money off of hardware because people refresh, especially companies refresh their laptops every 3 to 5 years. That works.
We can see phone iterations that were becoming so ridiculously
Same
minuscule
problem.
between
Yeah.
model to model year on year now, that there's almost no point in buying the latest model because the one the year before, you'll save yourself money by buying the one leak from the year before or the year before that.
Yeah,
Just,
so the
you know,
question is
it's
how many
how can I
companies
make the
that sell mobile phones only sell mobile phones?
few because you can get a watch and a
None.
ring and a watch and a ring and a hat and glasses, can't you? So it's everything,
And
you know.
services and everything else, right? Your backup plan and everything else.
Hey, before we move on to cool things and me fumbling my way through explaining the live chat, I have a PSA, and it's a happy
Okay.
PSA.
Oh.
You remember, I think it was last year, Synology said, "Hey, we're transitioning to requiring our own hard drives in your NAS."
How'd that
And
turn out?
well, it turned out pretty poorly because now Synology, they've just rolled out an update that removes that restriction. So for the NAS products that they sold that were restricted on which drives you could use in them, that restriction is now gone. So you can put in
No.
whatever spinning drive or SSD you want into your Synology. So yeah,
No,
and
that
that's cool.
it's funny. That's related to what we were just talking about. Synology has the same problem. You buy a Synology box, The only thing you're ever going to do with that is swap out drives over. You're not going to buy a new Synology box every 2 years.
No, the people that buy new Synology boxes every 2 years are the people that are buying additional storage or additional
Right.
use case. And like the Synology I have, it's several years old now. I don't need to replace it.
Right. That's why they wanted you to buy hard drives from them.
So, if let's here it is, found it. Okay. So the software version number that quietly removes that restriction, Synology didn't make a big deal out of it. They just made the problem go away. DSM 7.3. So there you go. I want to praise Synology for doing the right thing, but they didn't do the right thing. They did the wrong thing and then walked it back.
But so here's the question: is Synology going to be able to survive, though?
I think they will. I mean, because there's multiple markets
Yeah.
that they play in, and some of their well, like their biggest competitor initially, I think, was Drobo,
Drobo, yeah.
and Drobo just handed the market to them.
Is Drobo dead now? Okay.
So Drobo was bought by. With a Popeye Dell, I can't remember who bought Drobo, but when Drobo was basically on its deathbed, they got bought by some company, and then that company continued to offer a handful of Drobo products, but they continued to drop support, and a while
Yeah, the
ago.
company they were bought by a company called StoreCentric, which filed Chapter 7 liquidation
Oh,
in
okay.
2023.
All right.
Drobo was
Oh.
discontinued in January 2020.
It was always good tech. I always liked Drobo in as much as it was good tech. I mean, I have to admit, I don't have in the commercial world, I don't have a great deal of fondness for any of the manufacturers of those boxes that purport to be NASes. When I've seen them used, I mean, they're fine at home, but when I've seen them used in the commercial world, they always are somewhat lackluster in my worldwide experience of the stupid things.
Well, if you're trying to use a NAS in a business environment, in a corporate environment, and you're trying to buy just off the shelf full package products like Synology offers,
Right, no way.
it's not going to
Yeah.
work.
Oh
But there's a
no. If
lot
you're a
of companies
small
that do that.
business with 5 or 10 employees, the Synology might be fine.
Yeah, QNAP, Synology, the ones I've seen most often turn up as alternate external devices used by various companies that should know better, and they thought they were buying something good because they bought the Lyra one. You should have gone to Dell, you should have gone to HP and buy a proper device. Is what we've discovered, their performance was always somewhat lackluster.
Yep, there you go. So, anyhow, you can put whatever drive you want in your Synology again.
But for home, yeah, it's right.
Just as it should have been all along. Okay, so speaking of stuff that works the way it should, hey, how about the live stream and live chat? Okay, to be fair, today the live stream isn't working correctly. It's not the live stream fault. It is absolutely a technology issue on my end, and this is why when major operating system upgrades come out, you should probably wait a while to see what's going to work and what isn't. But anyhow, short version is we have a live stream that works really, really well, in spite of people like me doing stupid things like updating our operating systems. It also includes a great live chat. So if you're watching or listening to our shows live, you can go to live.britishtechnetwork.com. There we go. And you can see the live stream, and you can see the live chat. And that chat's where we put the links to the news pieces we talk about, to the cool things we talk about, and interact with everyone that's here with us live. And if you happen to be watching or listening to the show recordings later, you can still go find those conversations and all those links. You go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And did I get it right? So, Tom, you're
Yes,
smiling, and
you got it.
so I got it right. And then there's a calendar there. Click on the date for the show recording. So for today, that is Thursday, October 9th, 2025. And then you'll see the chat, and you'll be able to get to all the links. Patrice, she did an amazing job of modernizing our system a while ago, and so she gets a shout out because we have this slick system that works really well and really reliably because of her. Also, we're able to do all of what we do, live stream shows to you and make sure the recordings are there for you, thanks to the generous help of AWE Technologies. It's AWE Technologies, and that's a UK company that can give you the on-site monitoring for your construction projects or other whatever projects. If you need on-site monitoring, like environmental and video, they've got you covered. And their specialty looks like it's railroads, so that's kind of cool too. But yeah, thank you to AWE Technologies for being here and making sure we have the resources we need so we can bring you shows. That's awetechnologies.co.uk. So hey, thank you for that. Okay, now it's time to do some cool things. And which one of you, fine gentlemen, has the first cool thing for us?
I
That
have.
would be Tom.
Tom's beat me to it. Superb.
The headline alone has me hooked. And Tom, I have lost audio from you.
Sorry. Am I there?
You are. Welcome
Oh.
back.
Okay, thank you. My cool thing is a video from NASA, which is a flyover of the Martian surface, which was made from images from the Mars Express orbiter, which has been there for about 20 years. And apparently, what they did was they took images from a single orbit of the Mars Express and combined it with topographical information from something called the digital topographic model, and they didn't say where that came from, but somehow maybe it's from the orbiter as well. But this video is really cool. Imagine being in like an ultra light type of plane flying over the Martian surface at about 100 feet. And it really gives you a perspective of what Mars looks like that I've never seen before. Maybe they exist, but I've never seen it before. Oh, and
I'm
I should,
watching it
I'm
now, and
sorry, it's not NASA. It's
myself here. I'm watching. This is great.
European Space Agency,
Yeah, I think
ESA.
so.
I'm sorry, not NASA.
I have not
Give
seen a
up. Oh,
video like this of Mars before. This is super cool.
it is really cool. And it's sort of mesmerizing. And you can see why people think about what was Mars like 2 billion years ago, given that it looks like there's a bunch of dry riverbeds and things like that. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's super cool. Awesome. I just kind of want to sit here and just watch this now. Okay, I'll go back and watch it, the rest of it later. Okay. Ian, tell us about your cool thing.
My cool thing is the Zoe podcast. I occasionally listen to it, and it's the Zoe app, the health app that's been around for a while now, run by a guy called, what's his now? I'm on the screen. Jonathan Wolf is one of the guys, sort of key organizers of this. And they have a podcast where they interview various things. The reason I picked this today, particularly, is it's a callback to a couple of books that both Patrice and I have recommended over the last few years. One called Appetite, and then one called How to Eat by a guy called Andrew Jenkins. So this particular podcast is an interview with him. And so that's what makes that particularly, and that's what brings the interest to that. All to do with the science of appetite, why we eat too much, what the reasoning behind it is. And it's more than just can't stop eating chocolate. It's way more to it than that. All to do with hormones and how we're predisposed to it genetically because of how we grew up, where we grew up. There's some fascinating stuff to do with babies that were in the womb during a famine in Holland, of all places. And when they then were born, they were predisposed to want to eat more because they were expecting to be born into a world where there was where they needed to get more calories because there was more scarce. So that ended up causing that group of children to be more overweight than the ones before them or the ones after. So there's
Interesting.
some fascinating stuff going on that's, again, scientific studies and all this, and that, and also stuff to do with those kind of twin experiments where they've got ones where they looked at how twins' bodies grow and change, even though they may not be together. And that, again, is interesting in terms of genetic predisposition to how we are and how we grow and whatever else. And some of that leads into how we gain, lose weight and all those sort of things. So really, really interesting sort of science that we're starting now to get more and more of a clue about. Because in his books, he was saying it's we kind of wave our hands and we don't really understand how our body deals with things like appetite and stuff like that. It's all we'll consider it just being a willpower thing and not really much more. There is so much more to it. He started looking into it when he was a bariatric surgeon. So he does all those kind of ops that reduce the size of your stomach because you were getting too fat, but that was supposed to be a solution. But kind of things where it's not entirely didn't actually stop people from losing, getting fat again. And so it was, why doesn't my op work? Why doesn't this work? This operative, this procedure I've done for this person work? And kind of it's led him on this journey of discovery. It's fascinating stuff.
That's super cool. Okay, well, as long as we're going highbrow today with excuse me, with our picks, and clearly we are. I'm going to keep it rolling with a website called Standard eBooks. And so what Standard eBooks does, they take books that are in the public domain and then they format them correctly as an eBook. So then you can put them on your eBook reader, your tablet, or whatever device it is you use to read
Oh,
eBooks.
that's a cool.
And it's all free because it's public domain stuff, and they do take donations, and they have volunteers that are handling the formatting for the books. So it's like a labor of love, and it's a great way to get a lot of really good books in digital format where they're much easier to read than if you just like went to some rando site that had the text that you could download. And also, since it's just a standard ebook format, it's not locked to a specific device. So like, for example, if you have a Kindle and you go and look for ebooks, public domain ebooks, through Amazon, you can find them and download them, but they're Kindle format. So that's the only place they're going to live unless you know the tricks to go in and hack file formats and stuff. This would be much easier. Just go to Standard eBooks, find what you want, download it, and then put it on your device.
Oh yeah, that's pretty cool. Looking back to what Tom brought, you can have a look at the you can there's all the John Carter from Mars series from Edgar Rice Burroughs are there. I just saw a couple of the headlines, some of those. It's really cool.
So how would I get these on my Kindle?
Caliber.
Oh, yes, thank you. Caliber, yes.
Caliber. download an app called Calibre. You can plug your Kindle in, it appears as a device, and you can literally drag and drop your books onto it. And it'll
Yeah.
do whatever necessary conversion if they're not completely in the correct format. But those look like you can get AW, you can get the AW, whatever it is, format. Yeah, AZW3 Kindle format. So there'll be no conversion, it'll just drop straight on. Or you
Yeah.
can email them to your device, can't you? That's that if that
Oh,
still
that's right. You
works.
can email them.
And
If that
yeah.
still works.
I don't remember if that works. Amazon has done some weird stuff with getting
Yeah, they
content on your
have.
device lately.
Yes.
And Tom, just so you know, Caliber, it's spelled the weird British way and
Right,
not the
right, right.
regular way. Yes.
Thankfully, in my previous industry, one of the big products was called Caliber, spelled the same way. So I found it.
Ah,
Thank you.
there you go. And
Okay,
Ian,
I'll
thank
have
you
to
for
check that
remembering
out.
the name of the app. I was
No,
opening
drop it
my
in the
apps folder
chat.
so I could look through and find it because I
There we
couldn't
go,
remember the name.
Caliber. Have
Oh,
a
and there's
it's and
the
I've dropped a
link.
link for it in the chat if anyone needs it. It's a
Yeah,
very cool,
just
constantly
download it and
developed
install it.
tool. It's been around forever and ever.
Well, I think we just did the intellectual episode.
We did, didn't we?
Wow. Okay. Well, I think it's time to wrap up. So,
Or we say something stupid and
right? I mean,
blow.
it could happen at any time.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm here, so odds are it's still going to happen before the show ends. Yeah. Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me here on the Big Show on Thursdays. Otherwise, I'm still experimenting with Instagram. Find me TIYBOA on Instagram and or Ian's ENG underscore watches as well. Hopefully, some point in the future, you'll also find me on a show on this network about watches. If you like mechanical watches and watches in general, we are planning to bring a show out once a month. Hopefully, that will come to pass soon.
Cool.
Mr. Rankin is organizing it.
That's super cool.
And I'll be
I'm
part of
looking forward
that.
to seeing
I'll be
that
part of
show.
that.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, Tom, where can people find you?
People can find me on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social, and I'll be posting pictures of Canadian stunt planes soon.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Bad.
Yeah. Okay. For me, you can find me as Jay Gamut on social media. And I'm active mostly on Mastodon and Blue Sky and Pixel Fed. And right now, you are seeing drawings from me every single day because it's Inktober. So go check those out. And if you decide you want to do some drawings too, I would love to see them because I take great delight in seeing other people's drawings. And I seriously mean that. It's not like I want to laugh at your art. Absolutely not. I love seeing people's art, regardless of how rudimentary or poor you think it is. I'm still going to enjoy it. Okay, so then for shows, Tuesdays on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live, Thursdays on Dave Ginsberg's In Touch with iOS, here on The Big Show on Thursdays and The Mac Show on Fridays for the British Tech Network. Brian Chaffin and I do The Context Machine, and Patrice Brendamore, who's not here with us today, and I do Retro Rewatch. So, with that, thank you for an incredibly fun day today. This has been great. I always look forward to my Thursdays and Fridays because I get to hang out with cool friends from all over the world. I love it. So seriously, thank you. Everyone that watches, listens live, participates in the live chat, thank you for being part of this. If you watch or listen to the recordings later, so glad you were part of this as well. Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure we have people for shows. And speaking of shows, tomorrow, October 10th, as we record, there is not going to be a Mac show, and that's because both Patrice and I will be out, and we're the people that have the stuff to actually make the live stream come to life. So sorry about that, everyone, but don't worry. You can come back next Thursday for the big show And then next Friday, the Mac Show will be back, so you can come back for that too. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.